Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Abortion rights are under pressure all over the country lately, with dozens of states adopting new restrictions. A vote in Mississippi next week could take the abortion battle to a whole new level, defining life, personhood, as beginning at conception, and putting that definition in the Mississippi state constitution. That would effectively make abortion and some birth control and fertility treatments murder under the law. This hour On Point, conception, life, and personhood in Mississippi and beyond. You can join the conversation. Are you tuned in to the personhood movement, the Mississippi vote, the implications? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. We will hear in this hour from the National Personhood Movement and from the president of the Center for Reproductive Rights. But first to Mississippi. Joining me from Jackson is Jeffrey Hess, Capitol reporter for Mississippi Public Broadcasting. He's been covering their personhood movement and Mississippi's Initiative 26 for over a year now. Jeffrey Hess, thanks very much for being with us.
It's a pleasure to talk with you, Tom.
So what's on the ballot next week, Jeffrey?
On the ballot is a constitutional initiative that was filed because proponents of the Personhood Amendment gathered signatures from around the state. It would define a person in the Mississippi law as a beginning at fertilization, cloning, or the functional equivalent thereof. So at that point, that would then be under Mississippi law as a person.
So the moment of conception, it's on the ballot. If it's a yes vote, does it go straight into the Mississippi state constitution, or is there something in between?
There is a short period of time in between. The Secretary of State's office would have to validate the vote, and then 30 days after the vote is validated by the Secretary of State, presuming it's not challenged in court, then it would become part of the Mississippi Constitution.
What are polls, if there are polls, indicating about its chances of success or rejection?
I've not seen any really firm polling on the matter, so much of it is just speculation on terms of whether or not it will pass. There's a strong speculation that it is going to pass. To pass, it has to at least get a 50% majority of people voting who vote for it to vote in favor of it. But that number, the total number of yes and no votes, has to be at least 40% of the total vote in order to pass.
But there seems to be, you say, a good chance that it will in fact pass. If it does, would it not come immediately as a law or an element of the state constitution into conflict with the Supreme Court federal law and Roe v. Wade?
Lawyers I've spoken with tend to believe that it would go in conflict with Roe v. Wade, so there's strong chance it'll be almost immediately challenged in court.
Now, so there it would be, headed for the Constitution, challenged in court, maybe in some kind of limbo. Step back with us for a minute just to look at Mississippi overall and the state of reproductive rights and abortion there now. I'm reading here you have just one abortion clinic at this point in the entire state of Mississippi.
That's correct. It's in Jackson in the capital city.
At the same time, you've got an infant mortality rate, worst of any state in the country, I think. One of the highest rates of teen pregnancy nationwide. What is driving the personhood movement that's been beating the drum for this amendment, Jeffrey?
Well, Mississippi is both a very socially conservative state and a very religious state. There's been a long history of anti-abortion advocacy here in the state, mm-hmm. So it's really fertile ground based on both the conservative political leanings and the conservative religious leanings in this state. It's a really fertile ground for people who want to see abortion ended in the entire country.
What are the politics of this vote? Is it a Republican push, a Democrat push? You've got also a race for governor going on there. Where do the candidates stand?
Both candidates have publicly come out in support of this initiative. Also, we have the other big races for attorney general. Both of those candidates have come out in favor of it. This is an issue that really cuts across what you would see as your typical divides here in the state, frequently Republican, Democrat, and black-white. It really cuts across all of those boundaries, which really adds to the likelihood that it's going to pass because the typical divides don't really exist when it comes to this issue.
How much of this has been driven at the state level and how much from the national campaign? There's a national push for this based out of Colorado. We're going to hear from them later in the hour. I think they've had it on the ballot twice and failed both times in Colorado, pushed hard in Michigan. But is this sort of homegrown or does it feel like it's something directed from outside, a little of both?
Well, it's a little bit of both. There's no doubt that the national groups played a role in it. But to get on the ballot, it took 100,000 signatures here in Mississippi. Mm. So it very much has to be a homegrown issue. And like I said, the political establishment here is vocally in support of it. So it's definitely not something that someone from outside just came and put in. It has Mississippi support.
Has a number of big pro-life groups in the U.S. have actually opposed this. Anti-abortion groups saying we don't want to make this the big push because the Supreme Court might well knock it down and thereby set back their sort of strategy of step-by-step restriction on abortion. Have you heard that kind of resistance in Mississippi from anti-abortion camp people?
The most high-profile opposition on that account is the Catholic bishop of the state. His name's Joseph Latino, and he is obviously a pro-life advocate who says that going this route would set back anti-abortion efforts because it is so far overreaching.
But what we're talking next Tuesday, into the ballots, 100,000 signatures just to get it on there. So that's an expression of big interest already and a real likelihood that this will pass next week in your state, Jeffrey.
I would think, yeah, there's a real likelihood that it could pass.
Jeffrey Hess with Mississippi Public Broadcasting joining us from Jackson. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Tom.
I want to go now to Dr. Beverly McMillan, obstetrician, gynecologist. She's president of Pro-Life Mississippi. It's an advocacy group supporting the personhood movement and Yes on 26. That's the initiative there that would bring all this in. Beverly McMillan, welcome to On Point. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
And from Jackson, physician and infertility specialist Dr. Randall Hines. He's head of Mississippi Reproductive Medicine, a clinic that specializes in women's reproductive health and infertility. He's part of the movement against Initiative 26. Randall Hines, thank you for joining us.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Beverly.
Dr. McMillan, why are you pushing for this constitutional amendment in Mississippi that would define life as starting at conception?
I want abortion to go away from Mississippi. Right now, unborn children in the womb have no legal standing in terms of protection of their life if their mother chooses her, quote, reproductive rights to terminate or kill her pregnancy. There's no legal protection for the children. I want to see that stopped.
Now, those are, of course, rights currently under the interpretation of the U.S. Constitution by the Supreme Court. Do you think this will ever go into effect, or, you know, if it's passed by voters in your state, Dr. McMillan, does it just run up against a Supreme Court case and maybe rejection there?
What I'm hoping is a number of states will pass personhood amendments and a groundswell will keep coming to the Supreme Court. And when we the people decide that we're through with killing our unborn children, we've forgotten what it means to be human, we'll change our federal laws also.
Randall Hines, how do you read the winds here as this initiative comes to the polls next week? Do you think there's a real chance that this will pass in Mississippi, Dr. Hines?
I think it's an uphill battle for us to defeat it. We got onto this fairly late, expecting the state Supreme Court to take it off the ballot because it's technically in violation of the state law. However, that did not happen, and we've done everything we can in the last few weeks to try to educate people that this is a real shift in the way that we make healthcare decisions. Dr. McMillan and I are both products of a system where we are educated in healthcare. We then sit down with patients, and the doctor and the patient get to make a decision about what's best for her. If we pass this amendment, that's going to change, and we're going to insert state government into the medical decision-making process in a way that's never been done in this country before.
As a medical doctor, and of course, Dr. McMillan has spent her life in the same field. We'll come to her. But what do you think of this as a scientific definition of the beginning of life, of personhood, Dr. Hines?
Well, I think one of the problems with it is that we're going to assign legal rights to every fertilized egg. Only about 20% of fertilized eggs will result in children that are born, you know, indicating that we're willing to assign a legal right to 80% of fertilized eggs that are never destined to become people. And in IVF clinics, probably only about 7% of fertilized eggs result in people. We have so many things that fertilized eggs become that people don't think about: molar pregnancies, pregnancies in the fallopian tube, embryos with lethal anomalies, And all of these examples of fertilized eggs would be legal persons if 26 were to pass.
And therefore, immune to intervention to save the mother's life or whatever that might be. What do you think the impact would be on abortion, on birth control, on fertility treatment if this becomes the law of the land in Mississippi?
Well, it's hard to know about all of those things, and that's one of the problems with our efforts to educate people is because despite what's been said, many of these things are unclear. It's not clear what's going to happen. I think it would be clear that abortion, pregnancy termination would be halted. I think ectopic pregnancy treatment, molar pregnancy treatment, and certain types of birth control would automatically run into problems and be legal issues. One of the ones that we're very concerned about is there's no provision for rape. If someone suffers a rape, which I think is one of the most difficult and tragic things to happen, they would then be forced by the state government to continue their pregnancy.
Dr. McMillan, do you agree? Would this outlaw abortion essentially in all cases, including rape?
I do. I disagree with the effect it's going to have on IVF being able to treat a tubal pregnancy without fear of legal intervention. It's a legal principle. Ethics is being replaced by a calculation of consequences. If this passes, it's going to take supporting legislation to put anything different into effect in the how we treat patients. I remember practicing medicine before 1973. We never had a problem with treating ectopic tubal pregnancies or molar pregnancies.
Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point, and we're talking this hour about the National Personhood Movement to declare that life begins at conception, now on the ballot as a constitutional amendment in the state of Mississippi. It's the latest and maybe deepest abortion battlefront. Dr. Beverly McMillan joins us from Jackson, Mississippi. She's president of Pro-Life Mississippi, OBGYN herself, now retired. Dr. Randall Hines joins us from Jackson. He's a physician, infertility specialist, head of Mississippi Reproductive Medicine, and he has rallied against this initiative on the ballot in Mississippi next week. Dr. McMillan, here's a question from one of our listeners online, asks, would this mean that an expectant mother could be prosecuted for murder if her conduct contributed to a miscarriage?
I don't think so. I think that there's such a thing as deliberately trying to take a life, but a woman who's a marathoner and inadvertently miscarries, perhaps because of her exercise program, would certainly not be prosecuted.
Why would that not be, I don't know, involuntary manslaughter if you had this definition in effect?
Again, this is going to have to take enabling legislation, and I think Mississippi legislators are not so foolish as to pass something like that.
Just don't think it would happen. Randall Hines?
I don't think it would happen.
Mm-hmm. Randall Hines, what do you think, Dr. Hines?
There's actually a debate in whether or not this would take any enabling legislation. It is quite possible that the new definition of person could simply be applied mid-December to our current statutes on homicide. And in fact, even without that, there are numerous examples around the country and in this state where pregnant women have been prosecuted for miscarriage because of their behavior during the pregnancy.
What about medical professionals dealing with pregnant women and their vulnerability to legal charges of one kind or another, Dr. Hines?
I think that also is a very much an open question, and as it stands right now, because of this new definition and because we previously haven't had a law that was so broad and sweeping, I think we would be subject to legal and criminal prosecution.
Let's bring our listeners in, if I may. Jennifer in Ashland, Massachusetts. You're on the air with Drs. McMillan and Hines. Hi, Jennifer.
Hi, Tom. Thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
My point is just that given the political and economic climate that we're in right now, and given everything altogether, you know, we don't want to provide these girls with birth control information. We don't want to provide them with sex education. And we don't want to provide them with health care, you know, as a whole, you know, you know, that we don't want to provide them health care during their pregnancies. We don't want to provide them with the social services after the children are born. We don't want to provide them with welfare, food stamps. You know, so we're forcing people to have babies, and that the society is forcing these women to have babies that society doesn't want to support them in caring for. And that's my point. And I'll take
force the baby in a way, but not the care. Let me get one more, and I'll take it to my guest, Margaret, in Omaha. Thank you, Jennifer. Margaret in Omaha, Nebraska. Margaret, you're on the air.
Hi. I'm calling because choice. I've had two children living. I've had a miscarriage, two of them actually, tubal pregnancy, and an abortion. Every aspect of my life has been choice. Later in life, finding out I had a medical condition that would have affected my choice and reaffirmed the abortion. I'm looking at the childrensdefense.org for Mississippi, and it's showing the number of children in poverty in Mississippi is 232,628. Number of children without health insurance, 104,000. My concern is, why are people so involved in the reproduction of children that they're not willing to take care of after they're born?
Margaret, thank you for your call. Dr. McMillan, there's Margaret in Omaha. You heard Jennifer earlier. It's true, Mississippi infant mortality, one of the highest, is the highest, I guess, in the country. Teen pregnancy rates among the highest in the country. You hear the question from Margaret there. Why this focus instead of on the living children?
Well, I think we need to let our children get to the point where they can live. Practical considerations are secondary to life. Poverty can be overcome. Health insurance, more than half the world lives without health insurance. I think that's something we should address, but that's not a reason to kill our children.
Women in this country have a right under Supreme Court interpretation of the U.S. Constitution to the kind of choices that this would, in state law anyway, that would, of course, run up against federal law, but it would prohibit. What about that right under the U.S. Constitution, Dr. McMillan?
What about the right that we have in the Constitution to own slaves? Neither one of these are right. Human beings have a dignity that needs to be recognized in our society. We should not own slaves. We should not kill innocent children because of our lifestyle choices deliberately.
Dr. Hines, what do you think is driving this focus on this very, very, very early first moment of life, just conception, as opposed to the bigger issues of life and children and their well-being that our callers are pointing to?
Well, I think it's well-intended, but just perhaps slightly misguided, because there are so many ways in which fertilized eggs aren't destined to become people, and I think that's the most important thing to realize, is that we're attempting to legally define person in a way that it was really never intended to do, and I would agree that we have a lot of problems to focus on, and this is probably not the main issue. We all need to work towards reducing the number of abortions, and I think the easiest way to do that is to focus on unintended and unwanted pregnancies. When young women get pregnant when they don't want to be, I think it represents a failure on their part and a failure on the part of our educational system and our physicians and healthcare providers, and we need to work on that and limit the number of unintended, unwanted pregnancies.
How would this amendment affect birth control, Dr. Hines? Are there some forms that would become illegal?
Yeah, I think two things that at least the supporters of 26 acknowledge is that perhaps Plan B and the intrauterine device would become illegal. The rest of birth control methods are up for discussion because many of them have more than one mechanism of action, and which specific mechanism of action is going to determine the legal nature of the method would be up for discussion.
So even the IUD would be potentially illegal here, and Plan B, the morning after pill, I guess that would
that's kind of by definition.
And then,
of course, the morning after pill is one of the things that we rely on to help people in a situation where they've been raped. So it is ironic that that's one of the targets of this method. And, you know, the bigger question is who's going to make these decisions? This is going to be thrown in the lap of our state legislature and our court system, and I don't think either one of those systems is equipped to make these complicated decisions.
And what about fertility treatments? You and Dr. McMillan mentioned IVF earlier. I'm not sure everybody would understand, practically speaking, how would a definition of life beginning at conception come into play and affect fertility treatments for couples who are having difficulty having children but want them?
Well, that would mean that all of the embryos that we deal with would have the same legal status that I have. And we know that the majority of those embryos are not going to be chromosomally normal, and they're not going to go on to become children. So to give them legal status as a person, it just doesn't make good sense. How it would specifically affect IVF, actually nobody knows. What we are concerned about and what's been suggested by the supporters is that they are hoping this will do away with cryopreservation or freezing of embryos. If that happens, our pregnancy rates will go down, and potentially our multiple pregnancy rates will go up, two things we work against.
Dr. McMillan, do you think this would drive fertility treatments out of Mississippi?
No, I don't, but I do think it will probably bring some regulations in after some hearings in the Senate and House of our state legislature.
Mm-hmm.
Right now we know that it's pretty much an unregulated medical treatment. We have Octomom to prove that. We have the case in Hong Kong of the wrong embryo being implanted into a woman, and then when they realized the mistake, an abortion happened. You know, there need to be some probable regulations here. And I don't think cryopreservation would be necessarily outlawed, but selling, quote, extra embryos for biotech companies to experiment with, and or making designer babies, for which two women lawyers were arrested in California recently, and then selling them to the highest bidder, would probably be regulated.
And I would say that those types of bizarre examples don't happen in Mississippi. They're only three of us doing IVF here, and Dr. McMillan knows this all well, and she knows fully well that those things don't happen in Mississippi. It's also
I know they
true
don't happen
that,
in Mississippi now, but
it's also true that infertility therapy is one of the most government-regulated parts of medical therapy right now. That regulation is primarily in the form of data management, data keeping, and we think that's the best system possible. In Italy, where they decided to regulate IVF to the point of letting the government decide how it was going to be conducted, the pregnancy rates went down, and that would make it harder on our infertile couples.
Nikki in Hamden, Connecticut is calling. Hi, Nikki, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to say that I don't understand the logic of not giving not just women, but men also the right to choose. And for me, the most illogical destiny for women will be, for particularly fertile women, will be for them to become breeders. And in most religious-based utopias, women are used as breeders.
When you say breeders, what do you mean exactly, Nikki?
As that basically they will be seen as the people who keep providing the human beings to populate the earth, no matter what condition the earth is. As long as a woman is fertile, she will be capable of being a breeder.
Is that a bad thing? Isn't that kind of what women women have always had babies.
All women have not had babies. There are women who are infertile. There are women even in the Bible. You know, Sarah couldn't have a child. So, except in the Bible, that God made, you know, gave Abraham, you know, another woman. But the fact is, she was still, the other woman was a breeder for Abraham. And this is a religious, to me, this talk is a religious-based talk. And in religion, women are breeders.
And you're viewing that as like some kind of enforced status or negative status.
It is an enforced and negative status in a plural society that we live in. We don't live in a theological society. We live in a plural society. We live in a secular society where we treat human beings, particularly the ones who are born and who have grown, as thinking individuals with individual rights. And what she's proposing is taking away the most basic right of a human being, and in our case, females, to determine whether or not they are capable emotionally, mentally, and even physically and monetarily able and ready to have a child.
Nikki, I appreciate your call. Dr. McMillan, what about it? Are you looking here with this to impose a kind of theological society or rule on Mississippi, ultimately the country?
I don't think this is a theological rule. This is biology. We do start at fertilization. We are human. And half the babies who are aborted are female. Where are their rights?
And Dr. Hines, what do you say to our caller's perspective?
Well, I think certainly if you look at the rhetoric of the supporters, this is a religious question, and it's a little bit ironic that we're so willing to give away our religious freedoms that so many people have died for. You know, if you're a Christian, as I know Dr. McMillan and I are both are, the beginning of life is really defined by God and not by man and not by man's law. And so I find it a little bit ironic that people who are so devout are willing to step in that direction and try to make a legal definition of when life begins.
Though it may be defined in Mississippi by man's law as soon as next Tuesday. Dr. Randall Hines joining us today from Jackson, Mississippi. I appreciate your being with us very much today. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
And Dr. Beverly McMillan, president of Pro-Life Mississippi, also joining us from Jackson. Dr. McMillan, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
We're going to hear in just a moment from the national spokesperson for Personhood USA, which is pushing for legislation like this right around the country. Let me bring you in right now, Nancy Northup. This is president of the Center for Reproductive Rights, joining us from New York. Nancy Northup, thank you very much for being with us.
Hello, Tom.
You've heard just a little bit of the back and forth there from Mississippi. You see this on the calendar for next Tuesday. What's the significance of the vote coming up right in front of us in the state of Mississippi, Ms. Northrup?
Well, it's quite significant because this is an extreme measure to turn the clock back. And I'm sure that Mississippians, like all Americans, want their constitutional rights to make the decisions for themselves about their lives, about their families, about the use of contraception, about the use of IVF, about access to abortion services. You know, it's been over 40 years since the Supreme Court rejected, you know, it used to be a crime in this country for married couples to use contraception. And the Supreme Court said no. What our Constitution guarantees is a zone of privacy that every American can make the decisions that are important to him or her. And I'm sure Mississippians want this for themselves. And this initiative would take that away.
But it's Mississippians who put it on the ballot with a pretty big signature campaign and turnout, and there's some expectation that Mississippians may well pass this next week.
Well, the reality is that the Constitution is there to protect the rights of Americans, even against majorities that would trample on those rights. And I think with deep thought, Mississippians know that decisions about their religious beliefs, they don't want the government interfering with. Decisions about their family, when and whether to have children, they don't want the government to interfere with. So the first step here is for Mississippians to reject this attempt to turn the clock back and take constitutional rights away.
Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking this hour about the National Personhood Movement to declare that life begins at conception, now on the ballot as a constitutional amendment initiative in Mississippi. It's the latest, maybe deepest abortion battlefront. Mississippi's Yes on 26 campaign, that is for the initiative that's on the ballot there next week, has been rallying residents. The campaign has to come out and vote through speeches and rallies and ads like this one showing proud fathers looking at their newborn babies.
That's our son. She's got my nose.
With new advances in medical technology, we now have a window to the womb that reveals your unborn baby, who looks a lot like you just weeks after conception. Now we know an unborn baby is a person. Mississippians, vote yes on 26 in November.
There's the ad for the Personhood Initiative in the state of Mississippi. Earlier this month, a crowd of a couple hundred in Oxford, Mississippi, protested against Initiative 26. Among them, Kristen Hemmons, who in 1991 was raped and shot during a carjacking. In a clip from Mississippi Public Broadcasting, she urged the crowd to ask some hard questions about this amendment.
Ask them to look you in the eye and tell you that they believe a rape victim should not be allowed to receive, as part of her treatment, the morning after pill. If they say that they should be allowed access to the morning after pill, then you tell them to vote no on November 8th.
There's the yes and the no of it in Mississippi. Nancy Northup is with us. She's president of the Center for Reproductive Rights, joining us today from New York. With us right now from Denver, Colorado, is Jennifer Mason, communications director, national spokesperson for Personhood USA. Jennifer Mason, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Could you give us the history of these initiatives? I think it's been on the ballot a couple times in California. There was an effort in Michigan. What have you seen in the run-up to what we're seeing now in Mississippi?
Well, Personhood has really become a nationwide movement and a nationwide desire just to recognize that the child in the womb has rights, just like you or I, to be alive and not to be killed. And so we've seen, as we first started in Colorado in 2008 with a push for Personhood here, that it's just grown nationwide and people have become really excited to protect the unborn.
It's failed twice in Colorado. I think there was a petition drive in Michigan, but then there was opposition from other anti-abortion groups, and it never went to the vote there. What do you make of anti-abortion groups who say, don't do this, Personhood USA?
Well, we feel that those groups have had over 30 years to do something about abortion. And with Personhood, we've recognized that there is a loophole in Roe versus Wade where Justice Potter Stewart said, if you can make the case for Personhood, the case for abortion collapses. He told Sarah Weddington, the Roe versus Wade attorney, that that if there was a case for the personhood of the fetus, as he said, she would have a very difficult case, an almost impossible case for Roe versus Wade, and she agreed with him. And so we're looking at that loophole and realizing that in 1973 we didn't have the technology that we have now. Now we know for certain that the child in the womb is a human being, and all human beings are people. And we've seen, you know, many, many other pro-life organizations get on board with us and support the Personhood movement. And we expect eventually all of those groups to come on board. But it is sort of a newer movement, and that's why we've seen, I think, a little bit of hesitation to jump on board.
What would ultimate success look like to you for the Personhood movement, Jennifer?
Well, I would see a Personhood amendment passed in every state.
With what consequences for Roe v. Wade? I mean, unless Roe v. Wade is overturned, even if it's passed in every state, federal law would trump it, wouldn't it?
Well, Roe versus Wade is a court opinion. There are many who argue that it's law of the land, not necessarily, you know, a set in stone law. But the consequences, I guess I don't see valuing human life and protecting human life as a consequence. We're a human rights advocacy organization. We see that every human being has a right, just a basic right to live, and that's what we're fighting for here.
Nancy Northup, in terms of reproductive rights, what have you seen in recent years? We're looking at all the dozens of states in which has been tightening up already on, at many levels, right up to and including abortion. How much have you seen reproductive rights already constrained by state legislation? And does the Personhood movement change the framework, the context, this approach to tightening up on abortion? Is it a fundamental shift? What are its implications, Nancy?
Well, I don't think it's a fundamental shift. I appreciate that the fact that it's an effort to get 50 laws to pass these, to overturn Roe versus Wade and outlaw abortion, makes clear that it's part of what the anti-choice movement has been aiming for a long time. And I want to just start by saying there's no loophole in the constitutional law. What was talked about at oral argument in Roe versus Wade, the court decided clearly in Roe versus Wade that person does not include the unborn. It's in the decision, it's clear. So this is an attempt to reverse Roe versus Wade and take that meaning out so that, again, the issues about contraception, IVF, access to abortion services would all be on the table. Again, it's a radical move to turn it back. And yes, it's part of this year. We have seen 50 anti-choice laws passed at the state level in the United States that are all restricting access to abortion. But this is the most radical, as just clearly described, of all those laws.
Understanding Roe v. Wade as it stands, of course, the anti-abortion movement is very aware that different court membership can mean different court decisions. We've seen that through history and certainly with the Roberts Court. If this should come to the Supreme Court after a Mississippi vote next week, how do you count the vote there today on upholding Roe v. Wade, Nancy Northup?
Well, Justice Kennedy, who is the swing vote on the court, was in the majority in Planned Parenthood versus Casey, which was decided almost 20 years ago. And in that case, Justice Kennedy and the court reaffirmed the importance of the entire tradition in the American Constitution of protecting the right to privacy, the right for families and individuals to decide about how they raise their children, about when and whether to have children, about their health and their lives. And that is a bedrock theme in American constitutional law. It's a bedrock guarantee to Americans. And Justice Kennedy was part of that decision, also used in the Lawrence versus Texas case. So I think that this would be a radical departure and would take a change of the constituency of the Supreme Court for it to be upheld.
Jennifer Mason, how do you read the court today? With this Supreme Court composed as it is right now, what do you think are your chances? I guess it would require overturning Roe v. Wade for you to see this come to fruition nationally. Do you think that's a possibility here? Or are you looking down the road to some different court composition? Or, you know, Nancy would say it would never happen under current interpretation.
Well, I don't think the Supreme Court is consistently getting more conservative as far as life issues go. So, you know, I, as far as right now, I couldn't say what would happen at the Supreme Court. But I do know that the states have a right to defend their own citizens, even their tiniest citizens. And if the state decides to protect every human life, they have the right to do so.
Let's go to our listeners. Mary Ann in Bethlehem, Connecticut. Mary Ann, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi, Tom.
Hi.
I agree with the personhood amendment. And I do think that life begins at fertilization. And I don't want my taxpayer dollars going to support public, sex ed classes.
Why not? Why not public sex ed classes so that we don't have unwanted pregnancies?
Well, because they're too mandatory. They're too socialist. Once a parent lets their kid walk into a sex ed class, the parent loses the parental rights.
Marianne, what about when you say that a fertilized egg?
The health teacher can drive their kid to Planned Parenthood without the parents even knowing about it.
I hear you, Marianne. You say too mandatory. What about telling a woman you have to carry to term a fertilized egg, you know, from the second that it's fertilized? Is that too mandatory?
I really can't answer that question.
But we've got your opinion, though, and I appreciate it. Let me get one more. Thank you, Mary Ann. One more. Diane in Boston. You're on the air, Diane.
I think that really hit a lot of the inconsistencies that I hear in these arguments. On the one hand, the conservatives want to get government out of our lives, get rid of the bureaucracies, the safety nets that support us, and yet they come right into our bedroom and really want to affect our most intimate decisions and are not prepared then to follow through and support the result of what are many unwanted pregnancies, particularly those young girls, that, you know, sex happens and sex should happen in an educated way. And to say that parents then should be the primary defenders of their education of their children and therefore shouldn't get sex ed completely, is contradictory when then you're saying government has to make that decision.
Diane, I appreciate your call. Let me take it to Jennifer Mason. Jennifer, what about the argument that, that this is coming right into the bedroom of American citizens and kind of trampling liberty with this definition?
Well, first of all, this isn't coming from the government down. This is coming from Mississippi citizens up. The state of Mississippi, the people of Mississippi have decided that they want this on the ballot. They have fought to keep it on the ballot, and they will be voting next Tuesday. This isn't government invading the people. This is the people standing up for what they believe is right, and they believe that it's not right to kill a child. I'd also just like to mention that, you know, this amendment does not mention eggs. This is not about eggs. It's about people. It's about human beings. So when you look at the scientific definition for a human being, yes, that begins at conception, but in this country, you can have an abortion hours before you're supposed to deliver your child at 9 months. You know, that's really the battle we're fighting here. We need to think about these babies through all 9 months of pregnancy where you can have an abortion. Abortion is legal through all 9 months. That's just wrong. And that's what the people of Mississippi believe, and that's what they're fighting for.
Let me put a couple of perspectives to you from listeners who are responding online here. Kay says, keep your laws off my body. Take care of the children we have. And Aveta says, this represents legislated misogyny as the men who impregnate their partners, including rapists who are not caught, remain free and independent while women are forced to complete an unwanted pregnancy and delivery, putting their health, mental health, and future in jeopardy. What do you say to that perspective, Jennifer?
Well, as far as rape goes, that is certainly a tragedy when a woman is raped. And one of our spokespeople, Rebecca Kiesling, was conceived in rape. Her mother was attacked and raped, and it was a tragic situation. But eventually, her mother came to realize that she was thankful that she'd given life to her daughter. And Rebecca is certainly thankful to be alive. You know, abortion is an act of violence, much like rape is an act of violence against a woman. Abortion is dangerous for a woman. It's certainly dangerous for the child. And many doctors will advise against an abortion when a woman's been raped. And I think that we need to realize that, you know, rape does account for less than 1% of all abortions. But in those cases, I think we should punish the guilty criminal, punish the rapist. Don't punish the child.
What if the mother feels it's a punishment to have the rapist's child? Isn't that a punishment for her?
I have met many women who have conceived in rape, and every one of them has been thankful that they chose life for their child. I have never met a woman who said, I am so glad I had an abortion, or I regret giving life. It's the other way around.
Nancy, what do you say on this perspective?
I've just got to straighten out a few misstatements that Jennifer has made. One is that under Roe versus Wade, states can and do ban abortion after fetal viability. And so the notion that you can have an abortion at 9 months is just a scare tactic. Secondly,
it's true,
abortion
though,
is not dangerous for women. It is one of the most common and safest surgical procedures. 1 in 3 women in the United States has an abortion in her lifetime. The vast majority are in the first trimester when it is safer than carrying a pregnancy to term. I think this whole, you know, discussion, whether it's about what rape victims want to do, whether it's about whether married couples want to access IVF or contraception, or whether a decision is made to have an abortion, is once again around this area of life that in a free society and guaranteed by our Constitution, we get to decide. In repressive regimes throughout history, the government has sometimes forced women to have children, sometimes forced women not to have children, have forced sterilization, have limited families to one child. This is not the promise of the American Constitution, which is that each and every one of us can live in responsibility and the dignity of making decisions, of having our own religious beliefs. And for those whose religious beliefs don't allow them to use contraception, that's fine. Or who oppose abortion, that's fine. But many religious faiths support the use of contraception, support access to abortion services, support women's dignity and equality, and support the notion that each American can decide these things for themselves.
Let me go to John in Boston. John, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yep.
You know, Nancy and Jennifer, I think, present a really, obviously, a fraught situation. I think David Foster Wallace said it best when he pointed out that there seems to be a tension within liberal democratic values that on the one hand treat the scientific information that says, well, you know, we don't know whether or not this is a person with the attitude that if we do not know if it is a person, it's best not to kill it, seems to contradict with the democratic value of if I don't know whether it's not a person, and I have not the least right to tell you what to do with it, especially if you are not somehow confused about that question.
So give benefit of the doubt at that moment of conception, you say, John. One more. Kyle, Jamaica Plain, Massachusetts. Kyle, you're on the air. Our time is short, sir. What do you say?
Hi, Tom. I'd like to point out that the 7 billionth person on the Earth is expected to be born today.
Yeah.
And my question is, how do the pro-lifers know for a fact that when the sperm fertilizes the egg, it is, in fact, a person? I've heard them say repeatedly that there's scientific evidence, but I haven't heard any proof.
Yeah, Jennifer, our time is short, but what gives you the position to say that? We heard Dr. Hines earlier saying, you know, 80% maybe never go to fruition. They just don't turn into a fetus even. How do you get to decide that that's the moment?
Well, it's the scientific law of biogenesis. We can only reproduce after our own kind, so we know that our offspring is human. You can pick up any human embryology science textbook and see that life does begin at conception. There is no question there, no debate. At the moment of conception, there is a growing, living, developing human being. Now, where that human being stop growing or die, unfortunately, as the other doctor was saying, that is a possibility. And then, you know, of course, a miscarriage would take place or something like that. Again, a tragedy. But we do know for a fact that life begins at conception, that there is a human being there. And our position, of course, is that there's no classification of human beings that are not people.
Nancy Northup, where do you think this campaign goes, the personhood campaign?
Well, I hope that Mississippi voters will vote no, that they will not turn the clock back, keep their constitutional rights where they are, and that we leave this decision to each American.
Nancy Northup, president of the Center for Reproductive Rights, joining us today from New York. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Jennifer Mason at Personhood USA, pushing the personhood agenda right across the country. Next week, November 8th, the vote goes on in Mississippi. Jennifer Mason in Denver, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Listeners, you can continue the conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Follow us on Twitter and On Point Radio. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.